You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
A couple of teachers of mine, they were members of the party, and they really believed in what the party said, and it was, I felt sorry for them, because they had really lost their whole kind of view of the world, probably.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. Today's episode is different. The interviewer is not me, but one of our listeners who contacted me to help produce content for the podcast. This gave me the idea for a new area of the podcast called Cold War Contributions, where listeners can send in audio interviews for broadcast on the show. Email me at ian@coldwarpod.com if you are interested. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, then from the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can really make a difference. Click on the Support the Podcast menu option at coldwarconversations.com. Thank you so much to our latest patrons, Alexandru Marius Farrell, Adrian Kantich, and Mervin Piesa. If you like what you're listening to, you can really help us by leaving reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, or with your favourite podcast provider. This really helps raise our profile and get new guests on the show. James has been a fan of the show from the start, and in this episode he speaks with a work colleague who lived in East Germany. We give a warm welcome to James, our latest host on Cold War Conversations.
So, welcome to the Cold War Conversation podcast, Janina.
Thank you very much, James.
So, you were born in 1973 in the east of Germany.
Yes.
Very close to the Polish border.
That's right.
And what was that like as a place to have an upbringing?
It was lovely, to be honest. I had a very happy, quite boring, probably, childhood.
And in terms of your parents, who do they work for?
They worked for one of those typical agricultural companies, which were all over the place.
And you remember you saying earlier that there was a company bus, and they used to take you on trips into Poland from quite an early age.
Yeah,
everything was sort of state sponsored, and that you got up to lots of no good doing that.
That's right. They took us for Christmas parties, for example. They took us to Berlin, to the capital, to see some shows, or they took us to the summer camps in Poland or further down in the mountains in the GDR. So, yeah.
And were these always sort of fun camps, leisure camps, or did you have to work on it?
Well, there were work camps as well, but they were separate. They were more from school.
Right.
They were organized by school, but yeah, work camps as well. Sounds a bit scary, but we did work there a little bit.
So what did you do?
We did some painting, and others we did some strawberry picking, those kind of things.
Didn't you say that you ran out of paintbrushes or paint or something?
Yes, that was in Poland 1 year. We were supposed to be painting a lot of buildings or fences or something, I can't even remember. But we did run out of paintbrush, or didn't have enough for us, so only half the group could work in the morning, and then the other half had to work in the afternoon. The other group just slept or just looked into the sky or something.
That's what teenagers do, apparently, regardless of the country in which they are. And these I know that you mentioned before that you were quite musical, that you had the chance to go on various music camps.
Mm.
And did they take place near home, or did you have to travel to go and do those?
The music schools were separate from school, so people who were interested in learning an instrument or sing, as I did, they had to go to special music schools and were educated there. I went to music school twice a week for 3 hours a week for some classical singing and music theory at the time.
Is that something you kept up afterwards?
When I lived in Australia, I started again. I did it for a year or so, but it was just too hard to get done with school. And you can't sing that loud anymore if you don't have your own house. It's a bit embarrassing to sing in an apartment. Opera?
Shame, I think that's fine. And at school, so you started off, presumably with your parents at work, you were looked after in the state-run nurseries. Do you remember any of those?
Yeah, they're still there. They still look the same. Everyone was there. All my friends started, I don't know, at 6 months or something, because our mums went back to work quite early. And then we went first to nursery, then to kindergarten, and then all together to school.
School. And when you go back now, I think your parents, you mentioned your parents still live
there. They're still there.
Does it all look the same? How much has it changed?
No, it looks different. Because all the apartment buildings which I had there, they are now painted in pretty colors. They didn't have paint before. Then they have all those fancy supermarkets now, the big ones, which are everywhere. They have nice doctor's buildings and a nice big sports hall and sports grounds, those kind of things now, yeah.
So I guess the shopping experience from the TGR.
Shopping,
from the West End was something completely different.
Yeah. It's probably easier to get all your things now in one go.
Yes, okay. But, I could imagine. So what age did you start school?
7. Quite late. In Germany, you start very late.
And before then, you were at kindergarten, and then you started at 7. Yeah. You, tell me about your school time, because you were at school up until you were 16, inside the GDR.
Yeah.
And so you went very much through that system. What do you remember of that?
I loved school. I loved to go to school. I had the same teachers. All of them lived in the village. Everyone knew everybody, which was not always great, because the teachers always could grab your parents and just tell them what you did in school. But it was nice. I liked most of the subjects, not science so much, but we all became, you know, pioneers and members of the Freie Deutsche Jugend, Free German Youth.
Yeah.
It's a bit funny name, because it wasn't that free.
Why wasn't it free?
Well, we were in the GDR. We were not really free.
And you were obligated to do certain things.
You had to, yeah. There were people who didn't become members of the pioneers in the Freie Deutsche Jugend, but they were mostly very, very, very religious.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you really wouldn't, probably.
And was it allowed for them not to be part of that if they were religious? Was that accepted?
It was sort of accepted, but then they were not allowed to take part in certain activities we did together. They were allowed, but...
So there's a quid pro quo. If you joined, you could enable you to do something. What sort of things, being a member, could you do that you couldn't have done if you weren't a member?
Things like going on trips to museums, or just visit a company, or going to a gallery, or those kind of things. I mean, I think our school was pretty relaxed about things, and I only knew really one person in the school who wasn't a member of the pioneers, but it was a bit more relaxed probably than in other parts.
So were there rebellious youths? Was there, you know, was there a cadre of teenagers who were like there are today, you know?
No, I don't think so.
Everybody towed the line, more or less.
More or less, probably, yeah. But yeah, no. Lots of things happened outside, because I remember I spent so much time outside after school. We went, I don't know, to the sports ground, or just hung out somewhere to listen to music.
And what was the music listened to? Was it
That was totally Western music. I don't think I knew any East German music, because no one was listening to East German music at all.
So how do you get hold of the Western music?
We had access to radio and TV.
Okay.
And so you would sit there whenever the charts were on, you would just record them.
Right.
The radio shows.
Onto a cassette.
onto cassette.
So in many ways not different to what you were in the 80s and anywhere else in the world.
Exactly.
Trying to make sure that the DJ wasn't heard and you just got your music.
Yeah.
Welcome to 80s childhood.
But we had those weird rules. When you had discos at school, they were supposed to play 80% East German music and 20% West German or Western music, which never worked because no one knew East German music. And no one cared and no one wanted it. So.
Did everybody sit out on the sides when they were playing East German?
It did not happen. There was a rule, but it did not really happen in reality, no.
So were the rules that were there around you at school, did you work out quite quickly what you had to follow and what you could avoid?
Probably, I think, you know, when you think about how we got brainwashed, I think it was so young, it did not really register in many cases. Just you hear it everywhere, you read it everywhere. It's just, it's there, but it's not influencing you too much.
But looking back on it now,
yeah,
do you feel that you were brainwashed?
Oh, a few things were really bizarre, like I think I told you about the military education we had at school when we were 15, I think. Absolutely everyone hated it because there was this guy coming in from the army just educating on about what the East German army did, and they tried to recruit the boys from our school already for 20 years or something. It's That's annoying. It was annoying.
Didn't you tell me that you did a deal that if you did, went to the military camp, you
got
your motorbike license? Is that right?
That's right. But that's a different thing. There were lots of those, what are they called, societies for sports and technique or something like that. And there were different ones. There was diving in some areas, then our case it was shooting, sport shooting. And we joined that club or society for a year or so to be able to take our driving lessons very cheaply. So, yeah, you would go there once a month or something like that and do some shooting.
Quite effectively playing the system then.
But yeah, exactly.
Why not? And at school, when you look back at school and... I know you have a son in school in the UK. What do you notice the differences between the school system in East Germany where you grew up and the UK where your son grows up today?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
I think it was a bit more strict for us from a much younger age. So when I see, which I like much more, what I do here, it's so much nicer that I actually play for the first 2 years almost. Or it's more like a nursery, kindergarten kind of setting. That wasn't the same for us. And... we had to go to school on Saturdays as well. They don't do that here. But we were looked after from morning till afternoon. It wasn't as hard to organize. If I'm a working mom, so it's hard for me to, you know, have childcare and all those kind of things. I think that was much, much easier, purposely done in the GDR for women. There was just a system to help them, to support them with their childcare.
Do you think that was done for reasons of equality or for reasons that they wanted as many hands in the workforce?
Exactly,
as possible?
Yeah.
Hands in the workforce.
Yeah.
And I read a lot about people growing up in the GDR, about the collectivism. So that you would go out and you'd collect things, you'd collect recycling, you'd do the milk deliveries, et cetera, et cetera. Did you do that?
Oh, yeah.
And did you feel you had to do that? Or did you want to do that? Did you not even think about it? It was just part of normal day life.
No, we had to do that. But that was fun on a Saturday morning. I'm just going through a village and knocking on people's door and ask for their recycling. And old people were very, very thankful for us to pick it up. And then we took it to the recycling depot and got money for it. And a lot of times it went towards some, I don't know, trips, but sometimes it also went to some place like Africa, which we wanted to support.
So you didn't keep the money?
No. We collected the money and went into a big pot here.
Okay. And you know, in the Western world today, there's the broad theory that the harder you work and the cleverer you work, the more you can earn. Did that exist as a sort of concept in DDR?
I don't think so, no. I don't think so. Well, I haven't worked there really, but I couldn't really comment much on it. But no, I don't think so.
Okay, interesting. And so you went through school, you were a member of the Pioneers and so on and so forth. And in your spare time, you said you spent a lot of it outside, watching Western TV.
Yeah, of course.
And you never were aware of the state and the state apparatus. For you, it seems like quite a normal childhood.
You know, when I watch things like Deutschland 83 and Deutschland 86, you wouldn't have known certain things that I tried very hard to raise money by shipping weapons to weird countries and those kind of things. And I never felt that there was nothing to eat, for example, in the shops. Maybe it was different to other places because we lived in a village, so everyone had gardens and you could live off your own land. But I never noticed those kind of things at all.
And when you look back now, again as an adult, back to that time, and your parents, my guess is it was your parents that found it harder to adjust.
Definitely. I really
post-GDR world than you did.
Totally. They were in their early 40s, and they didn't know anything else. They had to start completely over when the war came down. Lots of people got made redundant, and the companies just disappeared. The whole jobs, kind of like the types of jobs they did, disappeared. So, and then they had to do this weird educational programs, which were not really useful, I'd say.
When the war came down, designed to integrate you into
where
they were wrong.
That was, I don't know if that really helped. For me, it was totally, totally different because I've never had to work I never had to work really in the East German world. For me, it was actually good. I think I'm still really happy that it happened like it happened.
And did you feel that then the experiences that you had when you were growing up after 16, after 1989, that you couldn't share with your parents because they wouldn't understand?
No, I think they were probably glad that it was so easy for us, that we didn't have to suffer as much as they had to suddenly. And they had to, you know, there were lots of discussions on comparisons to the West Germans. They said, oh, the East Germans are also lazy. The East Germans said, oh, they have no idea how it all worked. And it was very strange for years. It's probably still a bit of that. There are a lot of people are very bitter.
So bitter in the East?
Yeah, definitely.
Because of the stereotypes the Westerners
give them. Yeah.
You think that's why we see the rise of many of the more extreme parties in East Germany?
Yeah, guess so.
Because of that, because they feel disenfranchised by the political system now.
Yeah.
And in terms of your parents, did they stay at work throughout the transition? Did they?
No, they lost their jobs. A lot of people in the village actually lost their jobs.
I think that's what people find so interesting, is that one day a system and a state existed, a way of life existed, and that way of life dissolved literally within the space of 12 months and it was gone. I think people find that really interesting because it's hard to imagine that happening here and now where everything seems so pervasive and you can't imagine it disappearing. Yeah. It wouldn't do.
Well, the buildings are actually, a lot of the buildings are still there and they're just falling apart now. And sometimes I drive past and it's strange because it was a beautiful, we had all those Christmas parties there. We had there were lots of concerts in the gardens, and seeing it like this is pretty sad.
So is your school still there?
My school is still there, but that's still in operation, and the kindergarten is still there. Everything is still there. It's not what it's called anymore, but it doesn't have a name anymore. But it's still there as it was.
How do you feel when you go back now?
I don't know. It's just not the life it used to be. It's almost a little bit like I'm visiting something
completely different.
Completely different, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for bits of the old town that you knew? Bits that haven't changed?
Not really. A lot of things haven't changed in the village. It's a village after all. No, I'm not. I still walk all those old, you know, where we had to go on school runs. I still walk those. When I go for a walk with my parents, we still walk those paths. And say, oh my God, it was so much bigger when I grew up. It felt so much bigger. Mm. It felt so much further, farther, whatever it is. No, I'm not looking for old buildings or something, which are not there anymore. Huh?
So when the wall came down, were you at school? How did you find out? What was that actual day like? Do you remember it? Or was it a day like any other?
It was a Thursday night. I came home with my dad from some sort of village meeting where people discussing what was happening. And my mom said the wall had come down, and we didn't quite believe it because it was not very realistic. But it did, and the next day in school, a lot of people were just not there. I had to go to school, unfortunately. My parents didn't let me go off, and then I had to go to school as well on a Saturday, and there was really barely anyone there.
And from that point on, was it very different? Or did normality return briefly before it started to change and dissolve?
I think the first days or weeks was... they were different because people kind of try to get to the West to just in case it all closes down again. But from then on, it was still taking a year or so to unification. And before that, it was not like a massive shock because in the summer of 89, so many people had already left the country via Hungary. And it was quite clear that something was happening. That it couldn't go on like that.
The border was becoming a lot more porous, wasn't it?
Yeah.
People were sort of moving around, and so it was inevitably happening there. And when did you first go from east to west?
On the next week, almost a week after.
What do you remember of that?
Not much actually, and I wasn't that impressed because we just ended up in a weird part of Berlin. And there were no fancy shopping centers. We found them much later.
I still be finding them.
It was cool, but we watched all those West German TV shows, so we knew what Berlin looked like, West Berlin looked like. So, you just saw it in real life now, Kudamm.
And then, did you spend your welcome money? How did you spend that? How did you waste that?
I didn't waste it. It was the best investment. I bought a cassette player and Rod Stewart's Best Off.
The question is, do you still have either?
I do, actually.
Really?
Yes, I still love Rod Stewart.
So that's thank you. Thank goodness to the West German government for supporting the economy and having a piece of machinery.
I think not many people actually know about that. That there was this kind of greeting money.
Who gave that to you? Where did you get that from?
Well, there was a sort of a rule. People in East Germany could, retired people of East Germany could go to the West, like my grandma could go, and they would get 100 Deutschmarks per year, and could spend it. And then suddenly, when the war came down, that rule applied to everyone.
Yeah.
So we were really queuing in front of banks who paid you 100 Deutschmarks.
Deutschmarks come over. Very nice system.
Yeah.
In terms of, you said you were a bit underwhelmed by the West.
Just the first day, yeah.
Just for a second. But then you went back to study at Humboldt University in Berlin.
Yeah. I worked there.
And you mentioned to me that there was a culling of the professors.
Yeah. But it was because I worked at the education faculty, and that was probably ideologically probably not desired anymore, the sort of ideology they were teaching future teachers. So West professors came in and took over, and there was a big process where they basically interviewed new professors for all those positions.
What happened to all these German professors? They
not many. There was one which.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War, because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
Good. Her old job back, but apart from that, that was all new people from the West.
So they say history is written by the victors, but also it looks like the future was educated by them as well. Was that a shock? Did you realise at that point that, I'm not going to say that you lost, but you were the least dominant of the two parties in Germany, or the two sides?
I think a lot of people felt like that. And at that place, most certainly people felt like they had lost. But it was more the older people. For me, it was, again, it was so interesting because I was actually working with those people from the West. I kind of got to know them, and I could see that they didn't have any special powers. They only, they were normal, yeah. And a lot of them just encouraged me to do well and learn languages and gave me lots of support. So for me, it was great.
It's interesting. We both watched the film From Us to Me about a group of people through the different ages. A fantastic film.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that some people embraced it, the change rather.
Mm.
Some didn't or couldn't, and those that did tend to, that were very much in favour of, let's say, the party beforehand, suddenly became very enamoured with the new system, the capitalist system thereafter. And it basically says that if you're massively for something, you're going to be for either state or capitalism or whatever. Is that similar to your experience?
Definitely. There were so many people who were so following the party line and then just adjusted very easily. And then there were other people, like a couple of teachers of mine, they were members of the party and they really believed in what the party said. And it was, I felt sorry for them.
Why did you feel sorry?
Because they had really lost their whole kind of view of the world, probably. But there were a lot of people who found it much easier to adjust and were really, really happy to adjust.
But I guess that's why they were teachers, right?
Mm.
Because they really were the acolytes of the party.
Although a lot of people, really, a lot of our teachers, probably more than half were just normal chemistry, biology, whatever teachers, the teachers who did Russian or civic education, those kind of things, they were more likely to be a bit more political.
One wonders if you looked at a textbook for civic education now, how probably it would stand.
I still have them, actually.
You still have them?
I still have them.
Perhaps you can get some scans of some of those pages up on the website. And when you look at them now, what do you think? What do you see?
It's very interesting because we talk a lot, or they talked a lot about how bad capitalism is, how people are being exploited, but they didn't really say that people didn't live in kind of caves, or they were not beaten up by their employers or something. Everyone lived quite well, and most people in the West lived quite well. So I think the pictures they try to, well, or the stories they try to tell us were just half truth.
Yes.
A lot of half truth.
I've seen some of the learning English language books, some of the texts they used, you know, were not only there to teach people English, but also to give them a message about the other side.
Oh, really? You know, I can't remember that at all.
You know, the capitalist landlord and the people live in poverty. And
yeah, that's kind of, yeah, you know, exactly.
That was kind of the message that underpinned it, as well as learning English. And then from Humboldt, you went out into the workplace and you travelled the world and ended up here in London. When you look back, go back to that period in your mind, or you go back physically, what do you see, what do you feel, what do you think?
Well, I had a nice childhood. I really had a happy childhood. I was just not touched by all this, what would have probably have come later, all those things you have to be careful what you say to whom, and
because you were a child.
Yeah, I just wasn't that.
So do you think that made, because you weren't, as you say, touched by that, do you think it made the integration for you from one world to another easier?
I think so, yeah, I think so.
And when you go back now, do you bump into any of those teachers?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely, in the supermarket, or I don't know, church sometimes.
Including the civic education teachers?
Yes, my Russian teacher, yeah.
What do they do now, one wonders?
All of them are retired now.
Okay.
Really, yeah. But a lot of them kept teaching, especially if it was something like English or biology or, yeah.
You had a picture of a tennis player.
Andre Agassi, yeah.
How do you hold that picture?
I just sent it. You know, there was a youth magazine called Bravo.
Yeah.
In the West, so the grandmas who got 100 Deutschmarks, they would bring stuff for their grandchildren. I always wanted to have a Bravo, of course. There were lots of stickers in there, and you traded the posters in there and things like that. So, and there were always addresses of the people where you could ask for autographs.
Yeah.
And I did ask for an autograph of Andre Agassi. And I got one. I can't believe until today that they let that through. It's just unbelievable.
Why would they not let that through, though?
Because that's typical. One of the things they would not have let through, because it's from the US. It came from the US.
Okay, even worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how often did your grand go over?
Not that often. Maybe 3 times a year or so. Not that often.
Did you give them shopping lists of what you wanted them to come back?
I always wanted the same. I always wanted a Bravo.
Bravo magazine. That was it.
That was it.
Other people wanted chocolate. You wanted a Bravo magazine. And did you have any relatives in the West when you were in the East?
Not very close relatives. My mum's grandma was there, but I didn't actually really meet her. Or I was too young. She died when I was very young.
Okay. So your mum's grandmother was over there. Okay. And there was no, your parents never left East Germany to go to the West?
No, they were not allowed at all, no.
Because they were workers and they were too keen to let go. Did your parents talk about how Germany pain to be divided, or?
Not really. No.
Would they talk about it now? Or were they were always brought up, I guess, when were they born? Late 40s?
1950, yeah.
Okay, so they so it was already all the way through.
Yeah.
Okay. And when did they first go to the West? When did your parents first go to the West?
On the Saturday. So I had to go to school. They went. And I had to go to school. Which I was really annoyed about.
Were the only one in school?
Almost, yeah.
And your parents, what did they think when they went over?
Oh, whatever, it was all interesting, right? Because they'd never seen it.
And then they came back.
When they came back, right?
Yeah. They weren't tempted to stay in the West?
Was that really an option? A lot of people, actually younger people my age, a lot of people moved over. So they started apprenticeships or studied or did something. But not so many of the parents, because they all had houses, they had their whole lives already there. It's a bit harder for them probably to move.
What do you think you would have done had the CDR kept going?
I really keep wondering what, because I've always been...
You've had a very interesting life. You travelled the world.
Exactly.
Worked and done in interesting places, done interesting things.
Yeah. So that's why I don't know, I'm really glad I didn't have to find out, because I wonder if I would have tried to get out or not.
But one wonders what you don't know you wouldn't miss. Or did you know that you were missing something?
I think everything I miss has nothing to do with GDR. It's more like, you know, I had really nice friendships, and so I liked to go to school. I liked to go to a music school and those kind of things. They were easy, but it did not necessarily have anything to do with GDR, so no. Mm.
Okay, I think we should probably stop there and let you have the rest of your evening back.
Cool.
Thank you very much indeed.
No worries.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our first Cold War contribution, and special thanks to James for putting that together for the podcast. There's more information in the show notes at coldwarconversations.com/episode and the number 67. If you like what you're listening to, you can really help us by leaving reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, or with your favorite podcast provider. This really helps to raise our profile and get new guests on the show. If you can't wait for the next episode, do visit our Facebook discussion group, where our guests and listeners just like you continue the Cold War conversation. We're also on Twitter at Cold War Pod. Just go to coldwarconversations.com and click on the Join the Conversation option. Thank you very much for listening. It is really appreciated. Goodbye. Thanks for listening right through to the end. I really appreciate it. And maybe check out our store and see if you can find the ideal gift for the Cold War enthusiast in your life. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/store. Thanks for listening. not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.